League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Oh, yes, hour two underway, the Monday Night Delight. Carla Dawson sitting in here at studio. And first hour, we did a lot of NBA and MLB. We've got NFL talk coming up here in the second hour. In fact, later this hour, we're going to be joined by Dan Shonka of Our Lads Draft Analysis. He will tell us all things about the NFL draft. It is interesting. We're now at the window in the calendar NFL when there are the voluntary workouts, and some guys are coming to work and some guys are not. Tom Brady is not reporting to the Patriots. He's got work in Qatar.
Yes, and Gronkowski's not reporting as well.
That's another story there.
But he is in communication with the Patriots about that. And apparently what he's saying, or his party line, is he's not sure if he's going to play next year.
Well, it just would be a huge setback. I mean, Gronk is one of the top players in all of the NFL. I got to believe it. In the end, he's going to show up. Maybe the Patriots are going to have to pay him a little bit more money.
That's what I'm thinking. This sounds a little bit like a holdout for a little more.
And then Tom Brady doing business in Qatar. What's the backstory there? I mean, what do you do in Qatar on business? He's not in the oil industry, is he?
Not that we know of. We might be pumping TB12 into our cars at some point.
He's going to make money everywhere he goes. He has obviously
been
shrewd on and off the field.
Right.
Somebody who's not been so shrewd, Reuben Foster, is also at risk of playing this year.
Wow, expensive lesson for the 49ers.
Well, and Lynch hasn't made many mistakes.
No, he has not.
That one, a huge setback. I remember when Reuben Foster was slipping in the draft. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought he was a top 10 talent. He was slipping late in the first round. When are they going to take him? Who's going to take him? And the 49ers finally pulled the trigger, but now with some regret, I'm sure.
Well, and you know, he is a top player in the draft. You're exactly right. You know, the linebacker out of Alabama, but he's been charged with felony domestic violence for dragging his girlfriend, punching her 8 to 10 times, and rupturing her eardrum. This is no small thing. So he has been. Richard Sherman accompanied him in court, so good teammate right away.
Got he's all set now. His best defense attorney, Richard Sherman.
There you go.
The great counselor.
I mean, it's going to be interesting because he was released on $75,000 bail, but he will face charges. And the NFL hasn't even spoken their piece yet. So,
all right, we are just waiting in on the NFL. When we come back, we're going to break down what's going on with Dez Bryant on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and it is time to talk about Dez Bryant, probably the biggest story of the NFL this week. And let's break it down from first, the Cowboys' decision, second, Dez's reaction, and then third, what happens next. All of which our fruitful conversation. The decision itself, the Cowboys making the decision not to offer him a pay cut to stay, but actually to just release him at this moment in time. It surprised me a bit they didn't go to him with a pay cut, thinking that, okay, he's overpaid for his productivity, but at a better price, the Cowboys could still be a better team with Dez Bryant.
I think that's exactly why Dez Bryant is taking this as, quote, so personal.
Yes.
Because I think the Cowboys party line kind of was, we're saving money, because they are saving money off the cap. You know, he had a great year in 2014. Pro bowler, he had an NFL leading 16 touchdowns, signs this 5-year $70 million mega deal in 2015. And ever since then, you know, his production has fallen off. You know, and especially once Tony Romo was no longer with the Cowboys and Dak Prescott came in, I mean, the completion percentage from Dak to Dez was 52%, you know, lowest of all receivers on the Cowboys.
It almost felt at times Dak was forcing the ball in Dez's direction because he had an obligation to feed the number one guy.
Absolutely.
Or it was preventive medicine because you never know what would happen on the sideline. Dez might explode and complain he wasn't getting the ball.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. And I think that's part of the reason the Cowboys let him go. I think the hard thing. So he was due this year, $12.5 million.
Yep.
Which is a lot when you have just come off a year. And I really like Dez Bryant. I want good things for him. But he, you know, was the leading pass dropper in the NFL last year with 17 drops. That's not pretty. And it's a almost $17 million hit against the cap. So they save a lot of money by releasing him. Where I think he's offended is not being offered a pay cut, like you mentioned.
Yep.
And we're talking late April. This was done Friday, this past Friday. The draft is next Thursday.
Hmm. I guess my reaction to those two points is that part of the reason the Cowboys didn't offer a pay cut, part of the reason they had to release him was that they really viewed him now as a number two receiver. And he has the mindset of a number one. And he might never be satisfied getting paid less and getting less productivity. Last year, remember the game? He was ranting on the sidelines, pacing back and forth, saying, get me the ball, get me the ball, get me the ball. That's a disruptive influence. And for a young quarterback like Dak Prescott, he has to be influenced by a longstanding veteran demanding the ball. The second thing that bothers me about Dez is, well, there are parts of his game where he doesn't seem as coachable as he should. The route tree, the limits on the number of routes that he can run after all these years, to say, well, now he'll learn them. He's 29. He's been in the league for 8 years. Goodness, those are things he could have learned and should have learned earlier, point one. I don't know whether to blame that really on him or on the coaching.
Who do you blame that on? Right.
So a limited skill set there. But the other thing that frustrates me is, I'll give him credit. When he catches the ball and he runs hard, he runs really hard after he catches the ball. He always gets the most. He's a strong runner. He often runs through cornerbacks. He gets a lot of yards after the catch. But he also runs with the ball out from his body, and he's always been vulnerable to fumbling the ball. He doesn't have good mechanics in carrying the ball. He doesn't keep it in tight. And that's something that this long in the league he should have developed.
No, that's duly noted. You're right about that.
So at this point, to me, because he's not as fast as he was, because of his decline in productivity, I think he's shown himself to be a solid number two receiver. And so I think that's where he projects going forward. I don't understand all of the personal animation about it, the calling out of the rest of the team, all the captains who must have gotten behind him and kicked him off the team. I don't see the need for all that animation. In fact, if I were coaching Dez, as our personal coach or counselor to him, I'd say, Dez, you don't need to be this animated. You don't need to make it a big personal deal. You don't need to call out Garrett's guys and say they're the ones who conspired to kick you out. Because all that does is create noise. It makes the next GM, the next team that might consider picking him up, I think that next GM has to say, do I want that explosive personality, that thing that might go south at any time, the Twitter feeds, the animated dialogue, do I want that on my team, and what will it mean for the harmony of my team?
Yes, I do understand that, and I also understand where he's coming from. And this is sort of a realization to him that I am no longer, maybe I'm a shell of my former self. I mean, he still is. He can give teams that need a spark in their passing game, he can be that guy.
No doubt. He's still an NFL player.
He still is an NFL player, but he may not be effective as a number one option. And I think that if he expands his route tree, he can go pretty much anywhere. But then he could also go places like New England, where Josh McDaniels is known for, offensive coordinator for the Patriots, is known for, you know, building their game around their strengths.
Yep.
You know, he would actually fit in well there. He would have to take a big pay cut.
Yep.
Belichick doesn't pay up big contracts. So that would be interesting. But I think, you know, it is personal to him. I feel like he did not appreciate the lateness to which this was done. And clearly the Cowboys, they don't do anything sporadically. They're a very smart organization, clearly, and very profitable. I think they're really moving towards a power rush attack that's going to begin with Ezekiel Elliott. And, you know, they brought in Allen Hurns when Jacksonville released him as a receiver. he's got the exact same numbers as Dez Bryant, you know, and they brought in Deontay Thompson. I mean, he's not a name like Dez Bryant, you know, so they've got Terrence Williams, who's already there, and he's pretty inconsistent. So it's clear to me that, A, they're moving towards probably a power rush attack, and that they're going to go for a receiver early in the draft.
Yeah, I see the Cowboys taking a receiver either in the first round or the second round. Mm-hmm. It'll be a great chance to ask Dan Shanka of Our Lads, the draft book, mm-hmm. the analysis next segment, what the Cowboys will do. Interesting to think about where Dez will go. Now, you
that
mentioned
is where he wants to go.
Well, yeah. So the whole notion that Dez says, well, he's going to go to an NFC East team so we can get revenge. Look, that's great banter. Dez is going to go where the money is and maybe where there's a good fit. Look, I don't know. I mean, in the NFC East, you got the Eagles and the Giants, both of whom are cap constrained.
Yeah, they're not going to.
So, sure, he can go play for the Redskins.
He could go for Washington.
But if I were Dez Bryant, I'd take a hard look at the Texans over the Redskins. I mean, look at how he might fit in with the Texans. He would be a great number two there. Hopkins, the clear number one.
Who gets double coverage, which would provide single coverage for Dez. I mean, can you imagine having that tandem on the field together?
Yes, and frankly, the Texans could use another receiving threat. Yes. They don't have a great tight end. Fuller has been inconsistent. He's a burner. He's got speed.
Oh, he's so fast.
But you put Dez into that offense, and that's a good trio of receivers.
And Houston has tons of cap space. We are broadcasting from Houston, so we're going to give them our first shout-out. But I honestly see it as one of the best fits. His home is in Lufkin, which is 2.5 hours from where we are here.
Yep.
And Houston does play the Cowboys this year.
Well, so he can have his revenge moment.
He can have it all.
But see, again, to scold Dez, suddenly the game will be all about Dez. If I'm the Texans, I don't need a guy to come in and make it all about me when the Cowboys play. If Dez Bryant would just keep his mouth quiet, come in and play hard and not make it about him, I think it's more likely he'll land with a team at a better contract.
Well, and you look at who he would be playing with in Houston. He would be receiving balls from Deshaun Watson, who is the second coming in this city. And I think everyone's excited and hopeful that he'll be healthy and see what he can do.
Well, the interesting thing about Deshaun is, well,
everything's interesting about Deshaun.
He's awesome.
Him.
I know. And, but, you know, he is a guy who knows how to throw receivers open.
Yes, he does.
Receivers who are nominally covered, seemingly covered, but you throw it to a spot where if the receiver can make an adjustment, he gets the ball. Watson did that masterfully last year, particularly with Hopkins, certainly with Fuller as well. And that would be something that, frankly, Dez Bryant was getting from Romo and did not get from Dak Prescott.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And nobody really does talk about the quarterback change that happened in Dez's career. I mean, I think that's really key to mention and give him a little bit of grace for him.
Sure. No, in fact, you look at the productivity with Romo versus Prescott, it's radically different. Mm-hmm. It's hard to isolate factors. Certainly quarterback play is one thing, but Dez himself, a couple years older, certainly a number of injuries may have slowed down. Anyway, I hope the best for Dez Bryant, but I think he'd be well-suited and find a better job faster if he would turn down the noise just a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I just don't know that he can.
Yeah, it's not his nature.
That fiery part of his personality
right.
is part of what drives him to do what he's doing. But he did do a classy interview with the NFL Network, and he was very calm in talking about this. They asked him to give names who he thinks are part of the Garrett gang. He wouldn't do that. I appreciate that.
Sure.
I get it. He's hurt. He's hurt.
All right. When we come back, we get a chance to ask Don Shanka of Our Lads what the Cowboys are going to do to replace Dez Bryant. That's coming up next when we return on The Boss and the Gloss.
Kane is in the building.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on SB Nation Radio, Dan Shanka of Our Lads, one of the premier draft experts in the country. Dan, welcome. You're talking to David and Carla.
Hey, how you doing? I tell you, it won't be long now. We're coming up on, about 9 days here before the draft, and we can find out where the good, the bad, and the ugly go.
Well, we love this time of year, and we just spent the last segment talking about the Dallas Cowboys, their decision to release Dez Bryant. So now looking at the Cowboys, do they have to take a receiver in round one, or can they wait to get quality in round two? How do you see the Cowboys draft shaking out?
No, you know, I'll tell you, I think that what they can do is wait till the second, third round areas because it's really a strong draft. You don't have the real sexy number one picks, you know, some big-time receiver like a Dez Bryant ready to go in that first round, but you really got a lot of two- and three-type receivers that are going to be real good guys that will hold up, I think, good size receivers that run routes that, you know, will be NFL compatible. There's just a, it's really a good second, third round area for receivers. So, you know, the Cowboys can wait around.
So you, do you think Calvin Ridley will be around in the second round?
Well, now that's another discussion. You know, I doubt it, to be honest with you. I think that, there's going to be a couple receivers go in the first round. It's going to be later. Ridley might be the first one off the board, and I know a lot of people project him to go to the Cowboys at 19. So I guess if the Cowboys are going to pull the trigger on a guy now, Ridley runs really good routes. Did not have a great quarterback to throw to him at Alabama for the last 3 years. Jalen Hurts was off base with his throws a lot of times, but Ridley is the sticky wicket with Ridley. He's not, and I know it kind of sounds funny, but he's not a great athlete. He's really good. He's really fast. But, you know, in the combine workouts, we always grade them, all the guys that work out each position. And he graded out, you know, in the middle of the group instead of, you know, a guy you think could go real early would grade out a little higher than that. He does run good routes. He catches the ball well. Got a slithery aspect to him. When he gets down the field, he can avoid people. So, I mean, he's kind of the pick of the litter if you're going to go with somebody in the first round.
We're talking to Dan Shonka of Our Lads Draft Coverage. So, Dan, one thing that strikes me when I look at the mock drafts is there are more linebackers potentially slated to the top 15, top 20 picks than some years with Edwards, Roquan Smith, Van Esch might get in there. You've got a number of guys who are working the way in it. Do you think there's a particularly strong class for first-round picks in the linebacker position?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it depends what you're looking for. But, yeah, I think that, you know, Edmonds from Virginia Tech is going to probably go in the first draft because he's big and fast and he's young, and he does everything really well. And as you guys know, you watch games on Sunday and you see the teams are lining up a lot in the 4-2 scheme.
Yep.
With the five defensive backs. And he's one of those guys that, hey, he can play inside. If you don't walk him out, you know, over a slot, you can put him out there. Of course, everybody loves Roquan Smith from Georgia because of the explosiveness. He's not a big guy, though. I mean, you know, he does take on blocks, and he slips blocks and can make tackles. And he just, you know, he kind of made his name, I think, nationally against Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl where, you know, he just accelerated and ran right through his tackles and knocked people on their backs and things. But he's not a real big guy, so I think, you know, some of the NFL teams would favor Edmonds because he can kind of do the same thing. Probably not quite as explosive, So, and then you got Landry from Boston College, who was outstanding a year ago. He's an outside guy. He'll be in that, you know, a lot of 3-4 teams would like him rushing from the outside. And then this Van Der Esch, he just kind of came on the horizon when he declared to come out in January and really productive this year. But, you know, those one-year starters are kind of, you know, they're kind of scary because they don't have a big book, you know, because he was nicked up before and things like that. But he's a guy that very well may go late in the first round also.
Okay, Dan, you know, I cannot let this conversation go too much longer without talking about the quarterbacks because I know it's ad nauseum, but I
was doing my best to avoid the topic.
I know. I love you thinking of the linebacker question.
My eyes and ears are bleeding. But go ahead.
Squeezing blood out of a turnip at this point. But I have to ask you about, I would love to hear, Dan, your evaluation of Josh Allen, you know, quarterback out of Wyoming, because I saw some numbers today that really, I thought, wow, I haven't heard these, and this just is so curious to me. So it was total passing yards for 2017, Baker Mayfield was at the top of the pack with like 4,600 yards. Sam Darnold, 4,100. Number 5 of 5 was Josh Allen with 1,800 total passing yards. And while this guy has so his physical size and rocket arm, that's what everybody's talking about. But is this an alarming stat? And do you think these physical traits can really translate into success in the NFL?
No, because he doesn't have three things right off the top of my head that you need to be a successful quarterback in the National Football League. And Baker Mayfield has them all, okay? And one is accuracy. You got to be accurate. You got to make great decisions. And three, you got to be able to process information with the brain speed of a high active computer. So and Josh Allen does not do that. I mean, sometimes I think he's driving a smart car on the Autobahn, you know, when you see him out there, because he just doesn't process information and sees. There's some guys that just can't see things real clearly out there because of the speed of the game, and he really played in a weak conference.
Right,
so, at least, you know, and he didn't see all those things. And, like, I mean, Mayfield, he goes out and gets pre-snap read, boom, he knows where he's going with the ball because he studies that the secondary coverages and he knows the keys and all that right now, and boom, it's gone. Well, Allen, he it's a little slower, you know, and takes – now, maybe with time, but you know, if a guy gets drafted real high, the fans are going to be screaming for him as soon as that starter stumbles and, you know, throws some interceptions and doesn't get some wins, and he's going to be thrown in way too early. I mean, he has some physical skills, no question about it, but you know what? Hey, a real strong arm is kind of the least that you need of all the attributes of a quarterback.
Exactly.
You got to be able to throw. You got to make all the throws, but hey, who cares if you can throw it, you know, through a cement outhouse at, you know, 70 miles an hour? You know, I want a guy that can have touch on the ball and keep my receivers in stride when he's throwing.
Okay, I'd love to know, Dan. So, how do you stack rank these top 5 quarterbacks?
Well, since you're kind of, you see a lot of the Cowboys and things like that. You know, see, Dak Prescott was one of our top quarterbacks a couple of years ago. Nobody had him up where we did.
Hmm.
And
you heard it here. Dan said it.
Yep. So, but anyway, here's we got Mayfield at the top. We got Josh Rosen second for some of the reasons I was explaining, that he's accurate and he processes information quickly. And he does have good arm strength. And and then we got Sam Darnold after that, who to us is a developmental quarterback. He's just, you know, he's had really, let's face it, one real good game in the last 2 years. And, of course, that was the Rose Bowl where they beat Penn State. And that was it. And then we got Mason Rudolph, who we really like. We got him fourth. And then we got Josh Allen fifth, and then Lamar Jackson sixth.
Hmm.
Wow. It is amazing. I agree with everything you said, Dan, about Josh Allen, and that really helps to clear things up. But how in the world did he vault to, you know, Mel Kiper's number one?
Well, you know, Mel's a nice guy, let's put it that way, you know. But, you know, and we, well, like I said, people that know our lads, all of us have been former pro football scouts, have been in draft rooms and been in the league, and that, hey, we all can make mistakes. There's no question about it. But at least, you know, we try to eliminate a lot of things that, you know, put a guy where he's supposed to be at. Or, you know, you're looking for, Mayfield, that really his height is probably the least. When I went into Purdue to evaluate Drew Brees when I was with the Eagles, And I pulled out my report here a couple of weeks ago, and I just looked at it, and I thought I was treating Baker Mayfield's report, you know, down to the fact that they're both from Austin, Texas, you know, and they're both about 6 foot, a little over 6 foot, and around 210 pounds, 212 pounds, and they both ran exactly 4.84 at the combine. So, but I think, you know, there's a lot of similarities with accuracy and things with Mayfield, and I see, in fact, since last summer, I've seen him kind of another Drew Brees.
Very, very interesting. That is Dan Shonka of Our Lads. Dan, thanks so much for joining us and all the draft analysis.
You betcha. Thank you for asking, and great being with you guys tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
Yes, that award-winning segment.
Here we go.
He Said, She Said. When we hear from sports luminaries what they have said, we break it down. And I want to start this week with Josh Rosen. He was quoted all over the place this week as we prepare for the draft. A week from Thursday, NFL draft, Rosen will go day one. He will likely go top five. But he's a polarizing figure, and he was quoted this week in an article in ESPN talking about, well, he was been asked about his upbringing and his family's wealth, because he's not coming from a traditional background. His father is a surgeon, and Rosen has been raised in relative wealth. So this is what he had to say. He said, okay, my family isn't like stupid wealthy, but I'm coming from a place where if football doesn't work out, I don't have to go work at McDonald's. What do you think?
I don't like it. You've got a locker room that maybe came from a place where they had to work at McDonald's. You know, he goes on to say, too, that he says tons of players needed this game, and they needed the money, and they played it out of obligation and burned out. I don't need it, and I still give everything to it. So he's thinking, he's giving us a positive spin, like, look, I don't need it, and I still love it, because people are questioning his dedication.
Sure, he's
to the
playing
game.
For love of the game, not for money of the game. That would be his argument.
But he took entire locker room and said, hey, there's a bunch of you that need it. I'm not one of them.
And see, going back to the McDonald's comment, to me, that's the locker room problem, because he's basically looking around the room and he's saying, if this doesn't work out for me, I've got a future. If it doesn't work out for you, you have to go work at McDonald's. I mean, it seems almost a separation. This is where he's been, well, there is the rap on him is he doesn't relate to his teammates.
It's disrupting. It's a poison pill in the locker room. That's what that is. And I would say that at UCLA, that was a very similar situation. You know, and he says he's very candid in this interview, which I appreciate.
Yep.
But what it does tell me is that he is privileged, which, hey, that's what he was born into, but he's very immature, because he says his excuse for his arrogance, which he admits, yes, I was arrogant. Well, I would say he is arrogant, but he says, but at 18 years old, I was given the keys to the Division I kingdom. Hey, this is not a one-off on Josh Rosen.
Right.
You know, a lot of these quarterbacks were given the keys at 18 years old to Division I programs, and they didn't handle it like this. I also would say to potential teams that want to draft him is look at his record at UCLA, 17-13. That's pretty underwhelming.
Right. And certainly I would think humbling, yet I don't sense
you
much humility here.
You right. would think, but no, not a lot of humility.
So he's going to go in the top five regardless.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think a New York team might pick him up. He would eat up that New York market.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Modern-day Joe Namath.
That's our first he said in this case. The second one is Danny Amendola, the longstanding Patriot, who has now left the Patriots, so he's a little bit freer with his words.
He's a Miami Dolphin.
He's a Miami Dolphin. He signed a big deal with them. Let's hear what he had to say. First, let's talk. He had some comments about Bill Belichick and what it's like to play for the Patriots.
It's not easy, that's for sure. You know, he's a sometimes, but... a lot of things I didn't like about playing for him, but I must say the things that I didn't like were all in regard to getting the team better, and I respected him. So, you know, I didn't like practicing in the snow. I didn't like practicing in the rain, but that was going to make us a better football team, and that was going to make me a better football player, and it wasn't easy. And he'd be the first to admit at the ring ceremony that it wasn't easy playing for him. And you know, the silver lining is that we were at the ring ceremony.
So when I listen to those comments, on the whole, they don't strike me as really negative. It's almost a portrait of honest. What a tough winning coach is.
And it absolutely aligns to how Belichick portrays himself,
sure.
honestly. And I love what Amendola said. I didn't always like it, but I always respected what he did. So he wasn't a jerk just to be a jerk.
Right.
He was doing it with a purpose in mind.
Right.
And obviously, everyone bought into it. It's worked very well for them.
Now, his next wave of comments, I do believe, were negative. And when he was talking about Malcolm Butler and the decision to bench Butler, let's listen to what Amendola had to say about the Malcolm Butler benching at the Super Bowl.
I have my thoughts about it because, you know, I was out there, putting my blood, sweat, and tears out on the field that night, and one of our best players wasn't on the field. And to tell you the truth, I don't know why. I did ask, but I didn't get any answers, and... I can't make decisions like that, so I don't really necessarily worry about it, but I know Malcolm's a great player, and he could have helped us win. For whatever reason, he wasn't out there. So, he's going to play more football in his career, and he's going to be a great player for a long time, and I know it's going to be tough when I line up against
him. That's
translation.
That's decidedly negative to me.
Well, you know what? He was brutally honest,
yep.
and his translation is... Hey, I was a key member of that team, and none of us know why the H he wasn't out there.
Right.
That's exactly what that was.
And still no explanation from Coach Belichick.
And we're not going to get one. I mean, if Amendola doesn't have one and he's a teammate, I would think, though, with Belichick being such a genius, the one thing you don't want around a Super Bowl is a distraction. You know, the week of, this was the moment of, this was during the national anthem that players were openly and visibly upset as they had just learned he's not taking the field. Look what it got him.
Here we sit, still no explanation, and it certainly looks in hindsight like a horrendous decision.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange.
Malcolm Butler's now moved his services elsewhere.
Okay. We talked about him earlier, but Dez Bryant, he's got a quote. We're going to hear from Dez Bryant in his interview with NFL Network's Jane Slater, talking about the Garrett guys and what happened with his departure in Dallas.
I'll say this right here. I believe that Garrett guys, I would say that.
So you're saying Garrett guys worked against you?
I believe that. I truly believe it. And
do you want to name who Garrett guys are?
I won't put no names out, but they know. And I want them to know on this air that, I know. I'll shoot them a text message and let them know. And little do they know is, they can wear that seat all they want to. But in that locker room, they know who they run and they talk to. They know who they communicate with. Everybody know what a real love is at. And I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, but that's the difference between me and them.
See, I know we don't agree on Dez. We really don't, which is funny. I really appreciate his honesty. He was very calm. He did not fall prey. He's very hurt, obviously, about
sure.
this. Has been very vocal that he's personal about it. But he did not fall into the prey of trying to name who the Garrett guys were. And honestly, he's right. There is no way that there weren't issues in that locker room because of Dez Bryant. And he's basically saying, yeah. Jason Garrett, you never hear from him. And I'm sure Jones has it that way. But it is interesting.
Well, when he talked about those guys with C's on their chest, it's only a limited number of people with a C on their chest. The first one that came to my mind was Jason Witten, who stylistically is so different than Dez. Witten puts his head down. He's a lunch pail kind of guy. He's not vocal. He's not animated on the sidelines. He's all team. Dez is a bit more on the all individual side, right? So that's the one that came to mind to me. But then the other hot button one is Dak Prescott. Prescott had to feel some tension with Dez. They didn't have the productivity that had existed with Romo. Dez was always saying, Dak, throw me the ball more. Did Prescott feel that tension? Now, notably, Prescott's come out and said, no, I wasn't part of that decision at all. I wasn't even consulted.
And I believe that.
So you think Prescott's hands are completely clean?
I do. He was very forthright.
Yep.
He just said, listen, I, as a brother, I'm sad about this.
Yep.
I mean, like, I really like the guy. This is a business, and this kind of stuff happens all the time, and I'm not privy to it. And I really do believe, especially with an owner like Jerry Jones, he's not consulting his players. Are you kidding?
But then you get down to Dez's accusation. Who are these Garrett guys? I mean, we're eliminating Prescott. One of the other captains was Orlando Scandrick, but
he's no longer there.
We're down a limited number of names, and so maybe you could say Jason Witten, but I don't know. It seems like an odd thing to call out those guys.
Yeah, I guess he's got to blame somebody, and he wanted to be a captain, and so, you know, maybe collectively Jason Garrett talked to them, but I don't think Jones went to them one by one. Interesting.
All right, let's move on to the next one. Hall of Fame linebacker Ray Lewis has been working with OBJ, who has had a lot of troubles.
As a mentor, right?
I mean, Ray Lewis is having trouble as a mentor because his mentee, OBJ, has run into all kinds of troubles. Mm-hmm. We've heard from Ray Lewis this week. Let's hear what Ray Lewis had to say about what it's like to work with OBJ and the fate of OBJ.
Where there's no God, there's chaos. Just listen to me, Colin. I don't care about religion. I'm talking about a foundation.
Right.
When your foundation is disturbed.
Yeah.
When everything you're doing is the opposite of what's got you to this place.
Yes.
Then you're making your own bed hard. Yeah. You show me your crowd, I will show you your future. Man, Justin Timberlake ain't never played no football. I love Justin.
Right.
But Justin ain't getting out there on that grind like that.
Yeah.
These guys he hanging out with, They're in studios all night. They don't have to get up. They don't have a time clock. They don't have no discipline when it comes to athleticism. It's a totally different discipline.
Ray Lewis for president.
Well,
I loved it. I loved it. You know, I think, so Chris Carter is another one.
Another one, yes.
Odell Beckham Jr., self-appointed mentors. And what I think is interesting, so Chris Carter was an admitted drug user, you know, early in his career, really struggled with that. And now he's the one that's talking to rookies when they come into the NFL and this and that. Ray Lewis, you know, love his message right there. He pleaded guilty to obstruction of justice, remember, in 2000 in the stabbing deaths of two people.
Mm-hmm.
So some people look at this and say, well, what kind of mentors are this for this guy? These are guys who have not had, that have storied pasts. And they've gotten through it.
Yep.
And they've realized this isn't the right path to be on, and they've turned themselves around. I think those are the best mentors to have, one, you know, that can relate somewhat.
Sure.
And OBJ is not, you know, not into this kind of thing, but his talent is getting masked by his sideshow, his little circus.
I agree. You know, the interesting thing is, just a couple weeks ago, OBJ was about to get traded, at least according to reports, right? Remember, that was an imminent thing.
And
I guess those rumors died down a bit when the Rams picked up Brandon Cooks, because the Rams were often thought to be the destination for OBJ. You could have put him in that offense, and it would have been electrifying. But that, all that talk's done. The Rams are off the table. They're not going to draft. They're not, obviously, they've already
have any money left.
Well, and they made their trade. They gave up their first round pick to the Patriots to pick up Brandon Cooks. Now their team, their roster is set at receiver. OBJ staying with the Giants. I mean,
well,
for better or worse.
Well, he showed up for OTAs.
He's
there. First day, not an issue. And, you know, they have a brand new head coach in Pat Shurmur. Do you think that him taking this job had anything to do with OBJ being on the roster? I think maybe just a little bit.
Right.
And he's saying, trade him? What are you talking about?
Right.
I mean, he doesn't have the final say. That would come down to the GM and John Mara. But, you know, honestly, Pat Shurmur wants him and is counting on him on that roster.
Well, a lot of people thinking that the Giants will take Saquon Barkley number two, and then they'd have Manning at quarterback. Hopefully it's a healthy and productive Manning. Barkley at running back, OBJ at receiver. That's a pretty electric trio.
That would be pretty. I'll take it.
Now, they're going to have to get some offensive line help. They got Nate Solder, and that's a big deal. They move Flowers from left tackle over to right tackle, so they've solidified the bookends. They probably could use another guard. But they are putting together some pieces, and with that number two pick, it's sort of interesting. They have this decision to make. Do we draft for the present or draft for the future? Draft for the present in Barkley or Chubb, or do they draft for the future another quarterback? But that will be something we'll explore next week, because draft just about 9 days away. We'll be right back. We'll empty out the notebook when we conclude SB Nation Radio's Boss and the Gloss.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So, breaking news, a real treat. We're going to have an extended play. He said, she said, we've got one more. And this is Greg Popovich, who is not used to losing, and he got clobbered by the Warriors in game one of the playoffs. Let's hear what Pop had to say.
Okay, what do you want? I'm so tired of this.
What went wrong for you guys tonight?
What went wrong for us?
Yeah, this afternoon. Sorry, I lost my...
They played better than we did.
Coach, you started Danny Green basically on Kevin. Did that work very well?
Did you watch the game?
Yes.
What do you think?
Didn't.
It didn't work very well. So we'll have Danny grow 4 or 5 inches by Monday night. Tell him to jump higher and move quicker. And we'll tell Kevin, don't be so good.
It's a little prickly in the air at Golden State, I think. Woo!
It is a different San Antonio Spurs team this year. They're not going anywhere, and it must be a tough adjustment for Greg Popovich.
I think, you know, honestly, I don't know that he thought there was a reality that they would get through this series, but I don't think he thought they were going to lay down and play dead.
Right.
You know, and, you know, couple the fact that Kawhi Leonard, his star, has played 9 games this entire year. He's not cleared for the postseason. He's not sitting on the bench. He's in New York.
Yep.
Rehabbing this quad injury. I mean, that's happened a year ago. So
that's a thorn in the side that cannot feel good. All right. You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Coming up next will be Patrick Creighton on SB Nation Radio.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.